Welcome to the Suffering Podcast. Each week, we walk you through how suffering is the way to sustainable success and the path to greatness. We are now available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and any other major podcast platform. Please subscribe and like to get the latest episodes as soon as they drop. You can always find our latest episodes at thesufferingpodcast.buzzsprout.com. Please comment. We may even read your comments on future podcasts and even reach out to you for a future guest spot. Like and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for The Suffering Podcast. Here you'll see links to episodes, updates, and inside information on how to achieve greatness through the joy of suffering. So get ready, sit down, and strap in. Sit your ass down. Let's talk about the suffering. It's time to start the pain. Sit your ass down. Sit your ass down and strap in. This is gonna hurt. Let's talk about the suffering. It's time to start the pain. This is gonna hurt. It's time for the Suffering Podcast. All new Suffering Podcast gear is here. The show depends heavily on our supporters to get the word out. Let people know that suffering is a team sport and no one is alone in their struggles. Wearing the Suffering Podcast merchandise accomplishes that goal. Check out our store at thesufferingpodcast.com or check our show notes for the link. Your support and love means everything to us. Imagine, if you can, something in your world goes wrong, and you have no one to call for help. Something happens so far beyond your scope of experience, you don't understand it, and you certainly can't fix it. What do you do? All the eyes are on you, saying, without any words, just please fix this. Now imagine having a calling to help, to run towards what most run away from, to make sense of confusion, pain, and suffering. The pressures, the stress, it all falls on the shoulders of medical professionals to fix what's broken. We need these people. They are the personification of essential. They are the angels that answer the call. I'm Kevin Donaldson here with Mike Felice, and on this episode of the Suffering Podcast, we sit down with Eric Engelhart to discuss the suffering of EMS. Thankfully, he is somebody who answers the call and has been doing so for a long time. Thank you very much for joining us today, Eric.
Thank you.
Mike, you're such a dickhead. Guess what? I'm fucking leaving that one in there.
Don't edit that out.
So before we get into it, Mike's been trying to make me laugh during the whole intro.
Well, no, you got to give everybody a background. See, this doesn't air live. And when Kevin does his intro, he generally fumbles over himself like five or six times.
I will edit every time you open your mouth out of the freaking podcast.
I'm Kevin Donaldson. We used to be here with Mike Felice.
Mike Felice is sitting here, but he's mute today.
Is my mic on?
This is going to be a fun episode because all three of us know each other. Eric sits on our board of directors for Denny Development.
It's been fun already before we even started.
Yeah, we've had a long discussion. Before we get into too much ball busting, I want to talk about this week's social media question, and it comes from Scott. And Scott writes, as a first responder, did you ever come upon a call where you just had no clue what was going on and you said, what the hell happened here? Eric, let's go to you first.
Yeah, quite a few calls. One that stands out the most is I was dropping my sister off at her nursing school down in Neptune. And as I was leaving, I wasn't a first responder at that time. I just drove up and I see a car into a pole, smoke coming from the vehicle. And I look a little closer and you see an individual hanging out of the driver's side window. As I get a little closer, I see an officer probably about 50 feet or so in front of the vehicle with his flashlight to the street. And you see the individual's head laying on the street. Now you look at the accident, typical accident, car into a pole. You never see anything that grotesque, but it was bizarre how it even happened. And, you know, I didn't have to sit there and watch to see how it happened or figure it out, but probably one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen and just don't understand how it happened.
You come on these things and there's like a sock up somebody's ass and their hand's missing, but it's in another time zone. You're like, what the hell's going on here? Mike, how about you?
Most of the calls that we go to, we have to figure out because nobody tells us the truth. I always said, thank God we generally go in pairs. So you could sit back and talk to people, you know, what do you think happened here?
You work it out.
It's like putting together a puzzle. You take the information from one person, you take the information from the other person, you put it together. And that's our job is to actually figure it out.
Right. So have you ever had one that was just like, damn.
Not really that I could think of offhand, but I mean, just like mainly like car accidents. You know, because nobody will actually tell, nobody's wrong in a car accident.
Physics will always tell you what happened, but sometimes getting to the root of those physics, because that's what I did.
I was going to say, you got accident reconstruction, all that. That's going to tell you exactly what it is.
But when you first come on it and you just say, this is insanity. There was a major highway ran right through my town. And we used to get it quite frequently where somebody would pull over with a flat tire. Tractor trailer would go through and they'd whack the side of the guy with their rearview mirror. It would end up killing him. It's happened quite a few times. There was one time I showed up and there, I hate to make light of this because it was a grotesque situation. I go up there and it's a little bit in front of the car. The headlights are on and I see just like, it looks like it's just a pair of pants. That's all it looks like. Well, the guy is bifurcated. So he is gone from the waist up. And because I look in the pants and there's blood, there's intestines and there's debris everywhere. And I go, what the hell is going on here? And where's the other half of them? Right. Like, there's no other half of them. Well, as I looked a little closer, he was still attached, but the rest of his body was about 100, and I would say close to 100 yards away, and his intestines just unraveled. It was just like one of those things where I don't understand this. How the hell did this happen? And he had absolutely no scratches from his chest up, not a scratch. So one of these long mirrors had to come through, and we didn't even get, there was nobody that even stopped, which is sad. Which is very sad.
There was one that really hit me. I mean, back in my days with the sheriff's department, I was actually home one night. My father-in-law got a call. My father-in-law was a captain in the sheriff's department. They said that a sheriff's officer was involved in a car accident. They believe he died.
They believe?
Well, they didn't want to tell him over the phone.
Oh, okay.
So he jumps in a car. He goes tearing out. I jump in my car and I go follow him because it's a sheriff's officer. It's someone I worked with. Happened to be my father-in-law's best friend.
Really?
Got into an accident. Somehow, he got thrown out the passenger side window. When I got there, he looked like he was decapitated. Because all you could see is the body, no head. Laying on his stomach. After they took all measurements and did everything else, they rolled him over. His head popped up. He landed on the ground on top of his head, and his head was pinned to his chest.
Really?
Broke his neck. To this day, I still don't know how that happened.
You know, one of the things that's very clear when you come across those gruesome situations, and I try to explain this to people, no matter how much you try to save dignity during death, in your last moments, it's very rarely where you go out like a John Wayne movie where you have final last words that are profound. Right. No, you're usually naked.
On the toilet.
On the toilet, because that's when you're having a heart attack, it feels like you got to take a shit.
Shit and go.
Yeah. So there's just very, very little dignity. And then there's some people who die under accidental circumstances. That's why Mike?
Autoerotic asphyxiation.
Always use a spotter. Always use a spotter. Just remember that. They're words to live by.
That's what I got you here for.
So, Eric, we've been trying to get you in the studio. You're a very, very busy man. We've been trying to get you in here probably close to the beginning of this podcast. We were finally able to kidnap you.
Yes.
And
it's been since right after my episode.
Yeah.
Because I told you.
This is a guy.
I got a guy for you.
So why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
So I've been doing EMS now for almost 30 years. I work for different agencies, all the way from Middlesex County all up to Passaic County. It's been a rough ride. You know, I did Trinitas Hospital, Robert Wood Johnson as a dispatcher, also EMT, Raceway Park for a few years, Lynnhurst EMS, Hudson Regional Hospital right now.
Did you ever get sick of that Raceway Park jingle?
You know what? Remember
Raceway Park?
Luckily, didn't have to hear that when I was out on the track, so it wasn't too bad. But it's just
what's your level of certifications?
So I'm EMT certified, basic right now, what it's called, CPR instructor, and also a 911 dispatcher.
Out of all those, which one have you found that's most rewarding in your life?
So all of them. My favorite job was working as a dispatcher for Robert Wood Johnson.
Really?
One of my last calls there was a officer-involved shooting where the officer was killed in his home by his own son.
Oh, no.
And that was probably one of the worst calls I've ever had over the phone as a dispatcher. I knew the officer very well, and it's just sad that his son got mad, wasn't allowed to go out one night, and his dad fell asleep in a chair, and he shot his dad in the face and killed him. That was one of my last calls as a dispatcher there, only just because I found another job that was full-time.
So, but you would have stayed there longer if you could?
I would have stayed. That was the best job I've ever had.
Really?
I really loved that job.
But it's that life of service, and it sounds like you've had that certain calling to do this throughout your life.
Well, I never really wanted to have anything to do with EMS.
Really?
But everywhere I was, there was somebody who was hurt, having a heart attack, whatever. And you know, I'm a good-natured guy. I like to help people. I don't want to see them suffer. So I would always stop, and I was always with one of my sisters. I have four sisters. We're coming home from the shore one day. Guy cuts us off in a van, flips over, gets pinned underneath the van. So my daughters are yelling, my sisters are yelling at me, get out, get out. Go help him, go help him. We get him out from underneath the car, me and a couple other guys, put him on the thing. And next thing you know, I'm getting a gift certificate for EMT class from my sisters.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Something that, you know, nothing I really wanted to do. I was into the graphic arts, wanted to do printing and all that stuff.
His original plan was to go into the NBA. Yeah.
But my tall legs.
That's this. So, Eric, how tall are you?
5'4".
You're 5'4". This is why Mike gets along so well with Eric, because he feels tall.
Yeah.
That's a sad, sad thing.
When I met Eric, I was going to go into the NBA.
People always look down at me. It's okay.
You've been one of our most fervent supporters throughout everything. Like I said, you do sit on our board of directors for Dennett Development, and you've done amazing things for us. I know you've listened to several different episodes of the podcast. What do you think about it?
I think it's awesome.
That's because of me, not Mike, just so you know.
You know what it is? It's awesome because of the people who are coming on this show. They're getting their stories out. They're letting everybody know that suffering is not just for your regular person. It's people who have been through difficult times. You know, my dad, who suffers from PTSD, we were really never close when I was younger. But as I got older, seeing him go through this was something I said, you know what? We have to rekindle what we didn't have when I was a kid. And we've been doing things together quite a lot. He's in the Navy, so we go to Navy reunions. And I listen to all these other guys that were on the ship with them with all their stories, and it's heart-wrenching to hear what they had to go through. Right. And the only time they really talk about it is when we have this reunion every year.
Group therapy.
Yeah. You can't talk to anybody who hasn't been through it.
No, you can't. And I've listened to multiple stories from different people who suffer through whatever situation they're going through. And for me to give advice to them, I can give them like a medical point of view, but I don't know what they're going through. I have my own problems with EMS and how we deal with stuff, but to hear some of their stories is like they had nobody back then to talk to.
Right.
You know, and now.
And it was looked at as, back then, it was looked at as weakness if you went for help.
Right. And back then.
It still is today.
Yeah.
You know, back then too, for them, the tragedy they saw was normal because that's what they were trained to do and, you know, all that stuff. But just to see people come on the show and talk about what they're going through is definitely therapeutic for them.
You know, it lightens them. It lightens
does.
Their load.
It does.
We got that call last week. So.
Yeah. Oh, yes, we did.
Yeah, it's definitely changed the way people look at PTSD, I think. I mean, it changes everybody in a different way. But if they have people who understand what they're going through, that have been through it themselves, and not just, you know, going to regular therapy groups, because you go to a therapy group and you look and like, oh, I don't want to hear this story again. He said this last week. Right. But that's his therapy.
Correct.
You know,
like, so, I call it rehashing when you go through all these therapies. Right. You know, you go to a doctor and it's like, okay, tell me why you have PTSD. Now you got to go through your whole story. Then you go to a different doctor. Well, tell me your story. It's like, I'm sick of talking about it.
The first time you did it, you're like, okay. Second time, third time, even then, you're like, okay, I can handle this stuff. I'm so far removed from it now. If you told me to go back to therapy, that would be my reaction going, oh. Yeah. Man, I got to live this shit again. Thought I'm supposed to be getting through this stuff.
Right.
It's important, especially those guys back there. Can you imagine being, was he Vietnam era?
Yes.
Okay, so you imagine those guys going through there, and it's a natural human emotion to feel these certain feelings. And I think back then it wasn't even PTSD, it was battle fatigue or something like that.
Shell shock.
Shell shock was World War I, I think, battle, and then it changed to battle fatigue, now it's PTSD. But can you imagine being this guy? You got nowhere to turn to. You have all these feelings bubbling up. You feel weak because you have them.
And you don't know why you have them.
Correct. That's the whole point of PTSD, is you just don't understand any of this stuff. What a lonely, lonely existence.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. I mean, again, I don't really suffer from that. But
I'm sure you have
very tiny bit.
Because, I mean, some of the stuff you see as an EMT has got to stick with you. You can't just go to a scene of a grisly death and then just pick up your bag and move on to the next one. Yeah. Well, it's got to stick with you for a while.
It does, but unfortunately, that's what we do. We go to the next job.
Right.
You know, no matter how bad it is, we can either help them, we can't help them, get them to the hospital, we can't get them to the hospital, but, you know, we got another call after that.
At some point, you have to try to detach yourself, but that's all part of putting on that armor.
Right.
But there's a lot of different coping mechanisms, which we'll talk about very soon. You personally, I'm sure your call to help people didn't just come about, you know, like you said, you got a gift certificate, but before then you were engaged in trying to help people. There's got to be something in you, some sort of a suffering story that leads you to this place. So do you think you have a greatest suffering story that you want to talk about?
The reason why I may have became an EMT, I'm not sure if this is it, but my friend Ken, who I was in high school with, was snow blowing during the winter season. And
thank God it was the winter.
He didn't disengage the snowblower.
Oh, boy.
Young kid, 16 years old, put his hand in to get the snow out and lost quite a few fingers on that hand.
Doesn't that happen like at least once a year?
It does. It's pretty
sad. Unbelievable. Whether it be lawnmowers or
anything, any type of
snowblowers.
So I think maybe that maybe pushed me a little bit more towards, you know, helping people. 16 years old, you lose half a hand, and he laid in the snow for 45 minutes with his hand in the snow to control the bleeding because he couldn't get up. He just couldn't get up.
It's amazing clarity of thought if you think about it. A 16-year-old kid has no life experience and sticks his hand in the snow.
Yeah, and he just waited. He was screaming and yelling. Nobody showed up. Next thing you know, he comes into school 6 weeks later with his hands all wrapped up, missing three fingers.
Wow.
So I think that kind of maybe he became an EMT, and I think maybe that's probably one of the reasons why.
Do you remember what it was like the first time you came up on a dead body?
I do.
I do as well. I want to see if that's a common.
Now an unattended death? So you come up on the smell first.
No, that one I have, but I can't remember that one as clearly as my first dead body where, yeah, you've seen people in viewings and things like that, but when you come a fresh one.
Yeah.
It sort of hits you in the belly a little bit.
Especially when the family's around.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough when the family's around. 80-year-old female. I was working for Rural Metro at the time. And we walked into the house and the lady's like, oh, I think my mom is sleeping. I was like, okay. When was the last time you talked to her, given all the generic questions? I woke up there and she is black. Fingers are decayed. It was pretty bad. She's probably been dead for quite some time. And I looked and I'm like, you kind of look like a raisin, you know, like, and this, like, obviously the stench was there. I'm like, you look like a raisin.
Yeah.
So I go down and I, you know, tell the daughter, I'm like, your mom is deceased. That can't be. I just talked to her three days ago. I'm like, well, I don't think that's possible.
Did she talk back to you?
So I was like, dude, that's not possible. And then we found out later on that the daughter had dementia. And so it's a combination of stuff. But yeah, that was my first dead body. And it was not what I expected. You know, I think a dead person, like you said, you see somebody in the viewing or whatever. You know, just somebody who's pale,
right,
a little bit of lividity, maybe some rigor mortis and stuff. But like, this was the most shocking one, especially for the first one.
Mine was, I won't say the street name, but I do remember the street name. It was number 23. She was an 83-year-old female, and it was a townhouse complex. And those downstairs townhouse powder rooms between the toilet and the wall, you're talking maybe foot and a half, right? Well, she's in a position, I would say like a Muslim praying. This is not a position that an 83-year-old woman should be in. And it was the first time, it was my first day out on the road. And one of he turns out to be a lifelong friend, who's a sergeant standing over there, and he goes, and she's clearly not there. And he goes, well, we got to do something. We yank her out. We're doing CPR on her, the whole thing. She ends up not making it. But I remember walking in there and seeing it for the first time. I remember that visceral reaction I had in my stomach going, shit, this is for real. It's a weird thing. You remember yours, Mike?
Two of them that stick out to me is my first one ever when I was with the sheriff's department. And we generally didn't respond to calls like that. I think I was driving through Little Ferry, if I'm not mistaken. And I see a bunch of Little Ferry cars go past me and, you know, lights and sirens and everything. So I pull over, see if they need a hand. So I get out and I said, what's going on? They said, we got something going on upstairs. I don't know. I said, you need a hand? They said, yeah, sure. Come on up. We went upstairs. Someone was just laying in bed with maggots coming out of their body.
Maggots. That's so disgusting.
Yeah. So that was the first one I saw. And then in Lyndhurst, which was actually kind of personal to me. You'd remember this, Eric, the old Aldo's. There was it's called a freaky dance club. You know, they played like new wave music or whatever kind of music, punk rock and all that.
Crap.
It was crazy. But they had apartments upstairs. We get a 911 call. And the lady just kept saying, I think she did something in the room. I think she did something in the room. Like, what'd she do? I don't know. I think she did something. We go up there, go to open a door and something's behind the door. The lady put a belt over they had the door thing on the top and she put a belt over that and hung herself. When we got there, she was still, I mean, it just happened. It was one of my good friend's wives.
Oh boy. Well, you talked earlier about unattended deaths and this all plays into the trauma that EMS sees on a regular basis. Unattended deaths. It was one of our apartment complexes and it was cold. And then it got hot. But the guy had passed while he's writing checks on his table, an elderly gentleman. So the heat was on, but then all the windows were shut. Apparently after he passed, then we hit the heat wave. So there he is just cooking and he's in there for probably 4 weeks. New guy. I'm with one of the new guys and I'm like, hey, Marty, go. You got to put that because the smell's unbelievable. You got to open that window. And as he's walking past the guy, he jostles the chair. I mean, you can't help it. But you want to know what I remember about that? This guy had the most impressive stockpile of Viagra I've ever seen in my life. So getting to my point there, that's that dark humor that you learn to cope with these bad situations. It sounds very harsh. We're sitting here laughing. We're talking about death. But when you're seeing death after death after death, that's how you cope with it. Is it, I know police, but is it the same with EMS?
So there's a couple ways that people cope with it. One, they just shut down. Don't talk about it. Two.
That's the ones you have to worry about.
Right. Yeah. Two, you laugh about it, which is it's nothing against the deceased or the incident you're on. It's just the way we handle it because if we don't, we're going to have a nervous breakdown.
Coping mechanism.
You have to have an emotion. Yeah. It's going to be anger, fear, nausea.
Right.
Or an emotion's going to come out. So what's the better of those?
Right. Definitely probably crying about it. Mm. You know, definitely, you know, and then talking to your partner about it after the call's done. Been on quite a few calls where I break down afterwards.
Mm.
There are some where I just laugh and I go, I don't even know how this happened. It depends on what the call is.
I'm wondering about that because police, it's a very male-dominated fraternity, say. And I know with EMS, you have a lot of kids out there who are, you know, that's how they get their EMT. That's how they like it. Their coping mechanisms, is it the same?
They usually tend to shut down.
Yeah.
And try to evaluate what just happened.
Right.
When I get new hires, if they're kind of young, I try to talk to them and say, listen, we'll talk about the job. Let me know what you think you could have done. Do you think you could have done anything? You know, stuff like that. And once they start getting used to it, you know, after 29 years, 30 years of doing this, it's
second nature.
Yeah, it's just don't, you know, you separate yourself pretty quick.
Right, I think as you get older, things affect you more.
Yeah, I do too. You know,
they do.
Like I said.
But you and I are in a different situation here. You're in a different situation because you've gone through your traumatic incident and you're, as a police officer, I'm sure you were very shut down. And through therapy and things of that, and it's happened to me. It's probably happened to I'm going to guess it does, where things just affect you a different way. So I'm not sure if it's age. I think it's that journey that we had to go on in order to release that.
But see, like in my incident, there was a younger officer that was involved in it too. And I couldn't even picture going back to work at first. My whole world has changed. And this guy's like, I want to go back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. He's a younger guy, and, you know, he just took it different. And he's going on to, I mean, he's having a great career.
Maybe that's there's something to that. But you're now a supervisor.
Correct.
With whom?
Lyndhurst EMS and Hudson Regional Hospital.
So how difficult was it to start at the bottom? Is it time? Is it performance? How do you rise through those ranks?
It was a little bit of both, time and performance.
Blow job.
Yeah.
Is it you get promoted the same way you do in police?
No. You go and you do your job.
Yeah.
You know, you do it the right way. People see that and they recognize that there's potential. Not that I thought that I would be the EMS supervisor for Lyndhurst or deputy chief at Hudson Regional, but I just did my job.
We all need a little relief from time to time. And there's a new product out there that I want you to go check out. It's called Heroes Relief Wine. This wine's going to benefit four organizations dedicated to relieving the heavy burdens that weigh on our military and first responders' shoulders. These are people who take care of us. It's time we start returning the favor. This wine's going to benefit Live Free Farm, a veteran-run and owned animal sanctuary dedicated to the healing of invisible scars through animal therapy. 23rd Hour Angels, the healing team is comprised of three beautiful women that rescue military and first responders from the burdens that trauma causes. Dented Development Project and the Suffering Podcast help repair dents caused by suffering in first responders and their families by showing how there is light in the end of the tunnel. So go to oldyorksellers.com and search for Heroes Relief Wine or check our show notes for the link.
The person you were when you started, if you could identify some of the changes to where you are now being in it for almost 30 years, how do you think your personalities, because you wear multiple hats. I know you're a father, you're a friend, you're all these different things. How have you changed as a person throughout that?
Definitely more confident, more responsible for sure, more caring. You know, obviously I have four girls. I have a stepson. Once that all started, I realized that it's more to life than, you know, just helping people. You have to take care of everybody, you know, especially when you have kids. But yeah, I feel more confident than I did a few years back.
Outside of the job, is there anybody that you can unleash on?
So
besides Mike?
So definitely.
When your head's on his shoulder and you guys are hugging and snuggling.
Well, we've had a couple cuddle sessions, but not too many.
Netflix and chill. Hey, Mike, Netflix and chill tonight?
Coffee dates, kitchen table.
But they're important. They're important. So, just like Mike's a guy that I can lean on. He doesn't hear from me for a couple of days, because we talk way too much. But if he doesn't hear from me for a couple of days, hey, I might be – same vice versa. Hey, everything good? I haven't heard from you in a couple of days.
Yeah. For the last 20 years would have been my wife.
Yeah.
Every call, she would ask me how my day was, and she would know if I had a rough day or not, and I would sit there and talk to her about it.
Oh, you would actually tell her?
Yeah.
No, that's counterintuitive to the way police work.
That's anti-law enforcement.
Yeah, she would always ask me, you know, how my day was, and she could tell that it was either a rough day or – you know, I would say, oh, it's okay. It was good. She goes, nothing crazy. I'm like, no, it was good. And if it was bad, you know, then she'd be there for me. So, you know, obviously my close friends, Mike, my couple friend Mikes, you know, my kids sometimes ask me nowadays, how's work? Anything crazy? Anybody died today? Oh, what happened? Stuff like that. But
as a young adult, I think I'd be interested to hear those stories, but they don't understand that there's an effect to those, and you don't always want to let that out.
Right.
You know, they hear the stories and it kind of affects them, but not on the scale that it affects the person at there.
It's my youngest daughter wanted to be a physician assistant. So she came and did a ride along with me, and we had a DOA at one of our crappy hotels.
That's a dead on arrival for everybody out there.
So
yeah, can I guess the hotel?
it's right. You know, yeah. I go running upstairs and I say, listen, stay at the top of the stairs, don't come into the room. And then we had one of our captains there, and I said, my daughter wants to be a physician assistant. Is it okay if I show her what's going on? So she comes in, and I thought that she would freak out seeing this dead guy laying on the bed. And she's like, Dad, this is cool.
Really?
And I'm showing her like what we look for in a deceased person, like lividity, rigor mortis, and all that stuff. And I'm showing her.
At that hotel, check for bullet holes.
I told her, I said, this is like a drug-infested area. It's just not a good place. So we walk out, and she goes, Dad, I have a question. I'm like, what's the matter? She goes, why is there a banana clip on the end table, which is the clip that girls hold their hair up? I'm like, I don't know. She goes, the guy's bald.
Oh, really? She picked that out.
So the captain goes, what did she say? She's like, I want to know why there's a banana clip on the thing if he doesn't have any hair. And then she turns around and says, Dad, I know why. I was like, why? He goes, he's probably banging a hooker. And I looked at her, I go, Peyton, what is he talking about? Let's go. Get out.
Come well, that's on. An interesting point. That's an interesting point. So from an EMS perspective, you go in there, and once medical aid is either rendered or not necessary, then it becomes a crime scene. So you have to be very cognizant of what you touch, what you see, your after action reports, things like that.
And I told her, I said, listen, you follow me in and you follow me out. Don't touch anything. Don't move. You follow me in and we'll go walk right out.
Except if you see a 20 on the table and scrap. Yeah.
So she kind of understands what I go through on a regular basis when we have like crazy calls. So, and she's usually the one that says, how's work? And
did she continue to down that path of physician assistant?
So with the COVID situation, she got really stressed out. So she kind of dropped out of school, but she's back in right now. I'm not sure what route she's going to go.
Right.
But yeah, she understands a little bit of what, you know, we go through. You know, she saw up to, you know, helping a little elderly lady to the ambulance.
It's probably one of the more valuable pieces of education you could have ever given a prospective medical professional.
Yeah, she loves it. She loves it. So, you know, she can take your appendix out because she watches Grey's Anatomy.
If she stays at a Holiday Inn Express, then she could definitely do it. Take it out. But out of all these calls that you see, is there one that you could pick out that maybe is the most difficult for you to handle?
The first pediatric patient.
Yeah, I've had a couple of that.
Terrible.
So first one, I was working for Rural Metro in his Old Bridge Township. We pull up to a infant not breathing, 9 months old. The police officer runs the baby out to the car, to the ambulance. Blue. Obviously, it's not a viable patient right now, but we worked on this individual all the way to the hospital and obviously deceased.
I learned that very early on. If you come across, before I had ever seen a deceased pediatric, if the family's around, you work on that. Even if there's no hope, you work on it. You work on it because then there's some hope involved. Right. Worst thing in there is you go in there and seem uncaring and say, that's the thing's dead. The thing's dead. Like it's a pet.
Right.
That's that compassion. That's that. There's some finesse in there with an EMS where you have to have a certain level of compassion, but you also have to be professional and businesslike.
Of course.
I went to a CPR call one time, and guy was laying on the bed, and like you said, you just knew. I don't want to say there was no hope, but let's just say there was very limited hope. So we get the guy off the bed, we put him on the floor. His daughter had to be about 6 or 7 years old. She jumps up on the bed, and she's just laying there watching us.
Oh, we're
doing CPR on him and everything. And I hear her in the background. She's going, officer? I'm like, she goes, officer? She goes, is my daddy going to die?
Holy cow.
I was like, ugh. No, we're doing everything we can, honey.
That's it. You're doing everything you can. You never tell him it's going to be okay.
We did everything we could. And then paramedics got there and they're like, why'd you do that?
So
because the kid's here.
I've actually come across this situation where there are certain people, as I said in the beginning, that run towards, and then there's certain people who run away. Have you ever worked with anybody, then please don't mention any names because I'm not here to get anybody in trouble, that showed up on a call and just refused to do their job?
Yes. Mm. They kind of froze.
Yeah.
Because, again, they're probably brand new. You know, I don't know their background. But you get trained the same way I do. We get trained to deal with any type of situation. We had one person who was pinned in a car, and this individual just stood there. He's so pale. What do we do? I go, well, you go get the oxygen. Let's put the oxygen on him.
Right.
Stood there and just watched till a bystander went and said, you're going to go get the oxygen or you want me to go get it? Then this individual kicked in and went and got it. But
It's got to be like an initial shock that
first time you see
sometimes.
It is. But that's the difference between first responders and the normal. You have that ability, okay. I don't like this. Nobody likes this, but you shut down your personal emotions for a moment. You get to work. You have to have quick decision making. You have to be direct on what you do. Otherwise, You're not saving anybody.
No, you're not. You're not. And that's, you know, I try to let people know when I get, I want to interview them. Do you have a weakness? Something bother you more than others? Like for me, it's childbirth. I don't want to deliver any babies whatsoever.
I was there for both of birth my kids. It's not attractive.
No. It's not. It's not. I don't want to have to deliver a baby out in the field. I don't want to do that. If I have to, yeah, of course I'll do it. But, you know, I'll kind of, I'll look at him like, oh, God, I got to deliver a baby.
So, yeah. You get that call of like a woman in labor, and that's when he calls out on his lunch break.
Yeah.
I'm just out on lunch now.
Hold on, man. We'll transport you. Don't give birth yet.
Yeah. Give O2 and transport.
hold this quarter between your knees and just try to hold on for a few minutes till we get to the hospital. You know, there's a lot of people that do that. It's initial, you know, when you're first an EMT, you come out there and you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. You know, it goes back to the question where, you know, is there something that you ever seen before that you don't know how it happens? And that's what they're doing. They're analyzing the call.
Yeah.
So
that's that paralysis by analysis type of situation.
It is. But, you know, once they start doing something, then their training kicks in. They start doing everything that they're supposed to.
Has anybody ever quit? When they see like their first day, their first week, they see some real bad crap and they just like, I'm done. Not for me.
Not with me.
Not with you.
So everybody's still, people that I know from 20 years ago are still doing it.
We had a guy who had dropped. He'd been down less than 5 minutes. He did a face plant on the hardwood floor, broke his nose. So there's a lot of blood around. I go in there with him, and he was a sergeant too. I go in there, he's like, ah, he's dead. I'm like, what are you talking about? And the wife's there screaming. I go, what? And he just walks out and gets on the phone. I'm sitting there. I get so mad. And I always was very respectful of my superiors and my supervisors. However, this one, it's a pretty safe bet that I just laid into him and there was not a goddamn thing he could do. He said, what's he going to do? Write me up? You're going to write me up? Okay, now I'm going to get you for refusal to do your duty.
Right.
So it was a pretty safe chess move by me to lay into him, but that's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
And that's where that unique individual comes in. But I'm sure it's not all roses for you. Is there anything about being in the EMS profession that you don't like?
Paperwork.
Yeah.
Paperwork.
Administrative things.
That too, which is really not that bad. No, I guess the hours just suck.
Yeah.
You know.
What's your hours now?
So, 7 to 4 in Lyndhurst, and I do weekend nights at the hospital.
Holy cow. So
I have to tell you.
By the way, Mike and Eric are roommates, just so everybody knows. And they came in different cars today.
We have to listen.
I got to go to work.
Here's the thing about me and Eric being roommates. We get together on Tuesday nights and go out to dinner. That's like the only time I see him all week. We go out to a restaurant and have dinner.
It's a perfect roommate if you think about it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we just have, when I tell you, I don't think there is anybody more dedicated to their profession than Eric. Like I said, he's out of the house all day. And I've seen it before where if he goes to a call, he'll give the people his cell phone number. So if you need anything, call me. He'll get a call late at night. Could you come down and check out my mom? And I've done it to him before, too.
Just don't ever do that when you start a podcast. Don't give out your personal cell phone because it will come back to bite you in the ass.
On his own time, he'll go down and, you know, throw a BP cuff on him and check him out and everything and say, I think you'll be fine or you should go to the hospital. And then he works all weekend. Like, you know, I won't go out for a drink on a weekend or something. I'm like, hey, Eric, what are you doing tonight?
He's
like,
it's either you love it.
I got to work.
You're broke or you just don't like downtime.
Listen, it's all of the above sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it really is.
Like I said, he is so hardworking, dedicated. It really amazes me.
Well, that's why you've risen through the ranks. We touched on something just there. So if you don't like downtime, because most people with downtime, it gives them a chance to think. And then you can decompress and you might get some, you might not like what you're thinking about. You got to have some sort of coping mechanisms. Every first responder has a coping mechanism. Some are healthy, some are unhealthy, some will go to the gym, but most of them will eat, drink, or engage in some sort of unhealthy behavior. Do you have one that's in particular? Don't tell me all three either.
Probably. Well, you know, I know there's a lot of Michelob organic seltzers that are missing from the refrigerator when I come home.
You know, it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know, there are times where I get home at 4 o'clock, 4:30, and I just vegetate to my room.
Yeah.
I don't do anything. I stay there. There are times where I'm laying in bed and 7 o'clock rolls around. I'm like, Mike, what are you doing? Hmm. You know, I want to go out and grab a beer or two. Or I'll just do nothing. You know, I don't, obviously with COVID and stuff, I gained like 25 pounds back because there's nothing else to do. You sit in your house and you drink, you eat, and then you go back to work the next day.
When you're going, replaying those scenarios in your head, like you had mentioned it earlier, when you do the after action report with the young guys, is there ever a time where you said, yeah, I should have done that, I should have done this, second guessing yourself?
Quite a few times.
Yeah.
Quite a few times. That's the nature. You get somebody who's in cardiac arrest, you put the defib pads on him, he's doing compressions, wait for it to analyze, and you're like, should I have been bagging him during that time? Should I jump right back on the chest right away? Should I wait to see if it says we got to do this, we got to do that?
But I guess that's okay, as long as you learn from it.
Right. And you do, you know, after doing this for so long, it's all second nature now. So it's kind of like riding a bike.
You know what's crazy? You know, like one of the common phrases, well, it's important, but it's not a life or death situation. What they're dealing with every day is a life or death situation.
Yep.
You know, you fuck up one time and someone's dead.
Nobody ever calls the ambulance just to say hi.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, really?
You'd be surprised. So it's not unfetched that elderly people who have no friends or don't talk to anybody will call.
And like
all
Mike?
All they want to do is talk.
I'm elderly. You know?
And we have no friends.
I got my AARP card.
So they do call for that.
But, we have a lady in town. I don't think you guys may have went out on during the day. She's bedridden. She'd call the police department, just have an officer respond to move her leg over like an inch.
Yeah. Still happens.
No, does it really?
Still happens.
No and kidding. I think she did it just because she's by herself and she needed people to talk to.
Yeah.
And the frequent flyers in town.
When I tell you, they were there sometimes 3, 4, 5 times a night.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep.
But that working all the time, it's got to affect your family somehow.
I make time for them. They have more of a social life than I do.
I guess you got to carve out certain amount of time for them, right?
Yeah. So we have time coming up next weekend. We'll have some time there, but they have a bigger social calendar than I do.
How old are your girls?
I have 25, 23, 21, and 19.
That's some suffering, bro.
And my son is 28.
That's some suffering. You got Gen Z. No, they're millennials, I guess.
I have 4 sisters and I got 4 daughters.
And then there's you.
And there's me.
So. They used to dress him up a lot when he was younger.
No, do you have to carry any type of liability insurance on yourself?
No.
No? That's all done through
the town?
And we, as long as you follow the scope of practice as an EMT, you're covered.
You ever plan on going a little further?
No.
This is it?
No, this is it. I was thinking about paramedic school, but then I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm not really a big school guy. I just don't. I'm happy we could tell. I'm happy where I'm at right now. So
I'm happy being dopey.
I'm happy to have people guide me through the podcast.
I went to college for a year, and after football season was over, I was like, okay, now what?
Did you really put on 25 pounds during COVID?
I did.
But that's not uncommon in the EMS world.
No, I mean, you can put on 25 pounds just because you like to eat.
Right.
But I was, when I got diabetes, I was working out with Mike at the gym. I lost 70 pounds in a year, went down to 234, and COVID hit. We got Italian food catered every day.
And the gym was shut down.
And the gym was closed. And,
makes you healthier. But I'm not even going to get into that.
You can get out and walk around. But you know what? By the time the stress from COVID and the people that you're seeing all day long, you just go home and go to sleep.
That seems to be a common thing with medical professionals. Not just EMTs, EMS. You see that in nurses. You don't see it so much in doctors, but you see it in nurses a lot. Where they're smokers. They're unhealthy. Part of it is the hours with EMS. I know that because hey, if you're riding at night, you're riding a bus at night. There's not what's open. Well, Dunkin' Donuts, McDonald's, Quick Check, McDonald's, Wendy's. Unless you prepare yourself, I guess it would be real easy to slip into that unhealthiness.
Yeah.
Correct.
Correct. You know, and eating is a coping mechanism for some people.
This is true.
So,
well, I mean, there's a lot of, I don't want to say a lot of downtime, but really there is a lot of downtime in EMS. I mean, you're sitting in the building waiting for the next call. Right. You know, it's a reactive business. It's not a proactive. You can't go out and say, hey, do you need an ambulance? Right. You know, they have to come call you.
Right.
Hit you with my truck.
Hey, step out the street for a minute. I need a job to do.
When it's proven that through physical health, whether you go into the gym, exercise, and things like that, it does improve mental health. But EMTs, nurses, EMS, they do get the scars from things that they see. Is there any emphasis within your department on mental health, on repairing them?
Well, we have a service that we could call for them if they need it. A lot of them who have been with me have been doing EMS for 15 plus years. So anytime there's a, you know, critical incident, we'll ask them, do you need some help? Would you like some help? We'll call them in. And they'll say, no, they're good. You know,
see, now in law enforcement, we have like cop to cop. You have something like that in EMS?
We use
blue light to blue light. By the way, that's a negative term that we use, blue light to blue light.
I believe we use the Phoenix group.
Phoenix Group used to do, so Phoenix used to do the CISMs, so, the Critical Incident Stress Management.
Right, we have those, and I believe there's another division that we just got not too long ago. I just don't remember the name. But we do have services that can help them out with mental health.
And, yeah, and you could always go to your administration. They'll help you out anytime you want.
They just don't put an emphasis on that. Hey, this is, like you said earlier, it's a, oh, this is what we're paid to do. However,
right. There's an emotional background to that too. And they just don't know that. They think like, oh, you just go out there, take care of somebody, bring them to the hospital and you're fine.
You know, like I was saying, Eric is one of the hardest working people I ever met. I was going to say hard-headedest. I know you're going to keep that into you, jerk.
Well, I'm fucking keeping all this shit in. I'm keeping everything in incoherent that you say. Okay. And everything coherent, it's gone.
Okay. Keep the original intro in then, too.
All three of them.
Hey, thank you, Eric.
One day, well, that's going to be edited out. One day, I'm just going to release an unedited show, and everybody's going to say, wow, these guys really suck.
No, see, why don't you just record the intro before? Then you won't give me any fodder.
It's a warm up.
No, but what I want to get into with Eric is tell Kevin and everybody and the four people that are listening about Waves of Health and what you do with that.
So I'm on the board of directors for Waves of Health. It's a medical mission group that does missions to Africa, Uganda and Africa, and the Dominican Republic. And we go to Africa every January, Dominican Republic twice a year to render aid to the underprivileged people that live there. We give them medication, give them medical care, give them, you know, some hope to live a healthier life. Out there is a lot of diabetes, high blood pressure. So we've been doing that I started in 2015 with them and I've been doing it ever since.
Text me after the show, text me a link and I'll put that in our show notes as a place to go to. I always like to promote things like that, especially when you're going out and the life of service is you're giving so much of yourself. Even with our nonprofit, even Dental Development, Eric has done, you sold more challenge coins than all of us combined.
We had to order more.
We had to order because of Eric. Because you become engrossed in this helping other people because that's what you do. That's just part of who you are.
I also see that in Eric. You know, I'm on the Law Enforcement Torch Run Committee for Special Olympics, and we have a polar bear plunge team every year that goes out of Lyndhurst. And Eric is like the pioneer of that. You know, he started it. He rallies everybody up to get there.
Didn't this year you do it in a swimming pool?
Swimming pool, yeah. It was they canceled it.
It was pretty awesome.
It was a good time.
It was a good time.
We had a parade and everything.
Yeah, it was awesome.
But Eric is the one that pretty much took hold and gets everybody together. He's like the lead, probably the if I'm not mistaken, the biggest fundraiser on our team.
I wish. At one point I was, but I think we have a couple of guys that are bringing in a lot of cash.
Yeah. And like I said, he just took that by the horns and ran with it and gets us a town bus every year, and we take a town bus on, a little debauchery on the bus sometimes.
Yeah.
If somebody was so inclined to get involved in the medical field, such as yourself, the EMS field, of your 30 years experience, do you have any little nuggets of wisdom that you'd pass on to them?
They just need to care about people. They got to care about everybody.
Go in 100%.
100%.
If you're going in at 75%, get out.
Right. You have to want to do it. You know, and usually people that get involved are the ones that have had tragic incidents to a family member. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, my grandmother died of congestive heart failure. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a cardiologist. Okay, but do you really want to be a cardiologist just because your grandmother passed away of it? If you want to do it, you really got to care about people, no matter how stupid the call is, which there's plenty. If you're really into it and you really care about people and their health, then yeah, definitely get into it.
What about if a girl's father dies at a strip club?
then she's probably going to be.
Does she want to be a stripper?
Devastated for life and probably make some good money.
Again, that sick sense of humor coming in there.
And that's a coping mechanism.
Yes, so, you know, yes.
One story I want to touch on before Kevin talks over me. The child that you saved.
Oh, little, yeah.
He's gotten awards for this and everything else. I mean, I know this really affected Eric.
Yeah, it still does.
In a good way, in a bad way.
Just got to give me a minute.
Take your time, bro.
I know you're going to bring this up, too. So,
you could have told me not to.
No, it's okay. So, sitting at the building, we get a call for an unresponsive 3-month-old in a car on Ridge Road in Wendy's. We get up there. I get right behind the ambulance. My one guy is bringing the baby out. She's limp, pale, 3 months old. Beautiful little girl. I look at him and he's
What was her name? I know you remember the name.
I do remember the name. And I don't want to say the name right now, but I do remember the name. So cute. The mother's screaming. The older daughter is crying. I look at my employee and he looks at me and he's like, you know, shakes his head. There's no pulse. She's not breathing. We get her in the back of the truck. My guys did a lot of the work. As soon as we got her into the truck, the paramedic showed up. They jumped in the back. I gave them the report. The mother is pulling me by my neck, by my arm. Save my baby. Save my baby. I don't know what happened. Save my baby. Chief of police, a couple sergeants show up, and they ask me, what do I need? I said, I need a direct route to the hospital, to Claremont. He's like, okay. So with Lyndhurst, North Arlington, Nutley, Belleville, straight path, nonstop right to Claremont. There was probably about 15 or 16 vehicles going to the hospital. We get to the hospital. The mother's in the car with, I believe, the chief at the time who was driving our ambulance. I think she was with him. We get to the hospital. I get out. I open up the back door. The baby's crying and throwing up.
That's a good thing.
That's the only time you want to hear a baby cry and throw up.
She was in cardiac arrest all the way up until we made the last turn into the hospital. The mother comes around, and I said, she's breathing. She pulls my arm so hard, I think it came out of the socket. So this girl right now is now 6 years old. She's the youngest individual that has a internal defibrillator pacemaker, and she's doing great. And we keep in touch.
Was it a congenital issue?
Congenital issue that they didn't know.
Undiagnosed.
And we keep in touch every couple months. She wishes me happy birthday. I wish her happy birthday. They bring cookies for Christmas. We get together every year around Christmas time to have dinner or lunch together with the whole family.
You made an impact on that person's life.
It was pretty awesome, you know. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to my boys. They worked on her nonstop all the way to the hospital. The paramedics as well. It was that's one of the calls that will never leave my mind.
If you had done nothing else in your career but that would be a successful career.
That would be the best.
And what people that aren't in the first responder field, I guess you could say, you don't realize the stress that you're under on some of these things. Like I said, you got a mother tugging on you. You're yelling and screaming going on, and you have
you have to concentrate and focus.
You have to shut all of that out and concentrate on the issue at hand.
Right.
Which is a baby not breathing, which has got to be one of the most traumatic things ever.
Yeah. I've had it twice, and I'll never the faces still haunt me. But for that child, you know, you were that angel that came in. You and your boys. I don't want to leave them out there.
Yeah.
They saved this woman. So we're coming to the end of this thing, and I really want to know what this 30-year career of witnessing suffering after suffering has taught you.
To move in with Mike.
You really can't take anything for granted. You really can't, because in a drop of a dime, something can change.
The crack of a radio, your life could change.
That's it. Responding to a call could be your last one. You just have to be aware of your surroundings and know that there are other people out there that will help you, and you could talk to them, you know, whatever you need to do. But you just got to be diligent in what you're doing and care about what you're doing to make sure that You go home at night, whether you're police, fire, EMS, that's your goal. Go take care of people that need you, and you go home and take care of the people that still need you.
Well, thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for coming in here and speaking about this. You're really a great man, Eric.
Thank you. You're
much too good to be living with this hump over here.
No, I got to bring him down. You know, I got to knock him down a couple pegs, you know. Yeah.
So he doesn't get too elevated.
Yeah, he'd walk on water if he didn't live with me. You know? Now they say, oh, that Eric, he's a great guy, but he lives with Mike.
So that's going to do it for this episode. And let's talk about all the stuff that we learned today. Well, what Mike taught me was only 4 people listen to this podcast. Thankfully, there are people out there that run to help. You can't take anything for granted. Helping people is definitely a calling. But most importantly, you have to care about people. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Suffering Podcast, the Suffering at EMS. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And we will see you on the next episode of the Suffering Podcast.